Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Allie. Allie, powered by Verizon locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company. In collaboration with Allie, a membership-only community workspace for creators, each location is a community curated and powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Allie, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems with entrepreneurs. And now, onto my interview with Deanna First.
The trigger moment where I knew I need to get out of the corporate world is I worked at Ralph Lauren for a little bit, and I went in for the interview and he looked at my portfolio. And there's designs and then there's sketches, but he saw my sketches and he was like, You're not doing anything with these.
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music. Let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study they move, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
God bless everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast, which highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. To keep up with the latest on the show, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast. To keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is fashion and beauty illustrator Deanna First. Deanna has carved an amazing niche for herself, illustrating for brands like Saks Fifth Avenue, Swarovski, Ralph Lauren, Estee Lauder, and countless others. In this interview, we get to learn more about Deanna's upbringing in Ohio, her early career as a fashion designer for Ralph Lauren and J. Crew, how she began a career as a fashion illustrator, and so much more. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to the fashion illustrator, the entrepreneur, my friend, the silent giant, Deanna First. Yo, Deanna, what's going on, yeah?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Yo, I'm fantastic. It feels good to be like here with you right now, hanging out, having a conversation.
Long overdue.
Like the power of the internet.
Exactly, right?
Instagram.
Cool. And Instagram. Exactly. And like, I don't know where I would be if I didn't have an Instagram account, seriously.
Yo, I don't know what I would be either.
Business-wise, yeah.
Well, you know what? If we didn't have an Instagram account, you'd probably be, you mentioned that you were from Ohio. Actually, no. Without Instagram, we'd probably still both be in New York because we have to meet people face-to-face.
Exactly.
Face-to-face would matter so much more.
We would find a way to make it work.
Right. Like, but I wonder how people, do you ever think about how the world even functioned? Instagram and the internet's like one of those things where I think about now, like, what was the world even like? Like, how did you know an event was happening?
I don't know. And same with phones, like without having like cell phones, like you can't even imagine.
Yeah, no cell phone. Like,
so weird.
Well, you know what? It's one of those. Like, how do people even get around New York City without a cell phone?
I don't know. I've lived here like 7 years and I still use Google Maps. Like, I still, no matter where I'm going.
Well, see, Google Maps has even more purpose because you can now track the times.
Oh, see? Okay. Maybe that's why I use it. It's not just directions, it's time,
too. Yeah, time is a valuable thing. Yeah. So, your last name is First.
It is.
Which is a beast last name. Is
that, I know.
I was on the train thinking to myself, First, is that like German or is that like, I don't know, like Dutch or what is that?
So it originally was spelled F-U-E-R-S-T, but apparently, you know, through immigration, it got switched to F-I-R-S-T. So I don't know how long the backstory is with that, but.
Where'd your family move from?
Okay, well, my dad's side, I'm not super familiar, but my mom's side is from Italy, so
okay.
It doesn't really tie into the last name, but okay. They're like everything. They're like German, Hungarian, Slovak, like everything.
And you mentioned you're from Ohio. We're in Ohio.
Yeah, so like 20 minutes from Cleveland.
All right, so you're like a Cavaliers fan? LeBron fan?
Okay, I am when there's like a championship going on, but other than that, I don't keep up. I don't keep track.
Yeah, when LeBron's not there, there's not too many championships
exactly.
to keep track of.
Exactly. So,
what was it like growing up there?
Interesting. No, it was good. It's like I miss the nature part of it. You know, like there's so many people in New York, which is awesome because you like you feed off their energy. But in Ohio, it was like very relaxing and chill. And I feel like I'm a spiritual person, so I need solitude once in a while. So I like growing up in Ohio because it wasn't so busy. You got to kind of like be with your thoughts more than in New York.
Right. So. What was your childhood like? Like, do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have one sister. So everyone was a teacher in my family.
Okay.
I feel like I'm the only kind of creative one in my family.
Were they art teachers?
They all were teachers, yeah.
Art teachers, I'm sorry.
Not art teachers, no. No one was like super creative. My great uncle, though, was a mural painter.
Okay.
So I feel like I never met him, but I feel like that's kind of got passed on, maybe skipped a generation, so.
Oh, were you the oldest or youngest?
I am the youngest.
Youngest. So
yes.
I was listening to this podcast the other day about like child order.
Oh, and interesting. I don't know a lot about it. What did it say?
So child order and like the role. So like I say, for instance, I'm the oldest child, right? So the oldest child typically is the one who will move away first. They have like more responsibility.
Really?
The parents are stricter on the oldest because they have no experience. The oldest is typically a little bit more like scrappy because your parents don't have a lot of money when you first have your first child.
That makes sense.
Normally. But then by the time you get to the second child or the third child, there's more money there. So the kid kind of has like the second or third child has more leniency as far as parental supervision, or they're able to do a little bit more.
I don't think so. Not with me. No.
Explain.
I feel like, I don't want to say bad or good. There's no bad or good, but I feel like I was always like getting in trouble, and I don't know. I feel like they were more strict with me because my sister, super responsible, very like by the rules, by the books, and I don't like rules. I didn't like school. I didn't like any of that. So I don't know.
So you were just a rebel.
Rebel
with a cause or without a cause.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I just don't like being told what to do. And yeah, I guess you could consider that a rebel.
Oh, totally. Not being told
what
to
do. Not like a bad rebel, but like a semi-rebel. Yeah.
Well, I think it's also like the thing that goes back to being a creative. You know what I mean? The whole point of being a creative is the whole job is to think out of the box.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So you're just born to be a creative. Not a rebel, a creative.
A creative. See, I like that. Yeah, definitely.
How did art first like get involved in your life early on?
So it sounds a little cheesy, but ever since preschool, I wanted to be an artist. Like we would have journals and like they would say, what do you want to be when you grew up? And I always said artist since, you know, a super young age. I just didn't know it would be like the fashion and beauty industry. I graduated in fashion design and I had a corporate job for a few years before I transitioned over to illustration. So
wow. So you always knew you wanted to be an artist.
I always knew I wanted to be an artist. Yeah.
Was there like a light bulb moment in your early life where you knew that this was like your calling?
No, I always knew. Ever since I was like before kindergarten, I knew that's what I was going to do. But then, you know, when you look at colleges and I was speaking with counselors and people like that, they're like, oh, well, you could be an art teacher. You know, like they never pushed it to like you could be an actual artist or. So I went to fashion design school because it combined illustration and like I never sewed before. I just was like, oh, I like clothes. This would be fun. Let me like, you know, go this direction. So
does that mean you were talented at illustration and art early on? Like there was like a natural ability there?
Yeah. Yeah. Like even elementary school, I feel like I was in. They have honors art, believe it or not. Like they have like advanced art. So I was always, you know, taking extra classes for it. I would get like awards and things like that, but I mean it was elementary and middle school, so it was like small stuff.
Oh, was there a person who early on kind of influenced you to kind of just maybe not have the vision to, you know, propel you to, you know, pursue it in college or as a career or as an artist individually, but to someone who positively pushed you forward with your art?
I feel like there has been so many people, but I feel like the trigger moment where I knew I need to get out of the corporate world is I worked at Ralph Lauren for a little bit, and I went in for the interview, and he looked at my portfolio. And there's designs, and then there's sketches, but he saw my sketches, and he was like, you're not doing anything with these? Like, you should be in art. Like, even though I was interviewing for a design position, you know, he was, like, so surprised I wasn't doing something, you know, more art-related, because you think design is art. Every time I tell someone, oh, I was in fashion design, they're like, oh, did you draw all day? I was like, no, it was all computer. I was sitting in front of a screen. You know, it just wasn't creative as I make it out to in Project Runway or the movies. It wasn't like that once you were in the industry.
Because where did you end up going to school?
I went to Kent State.
Kent State? In Ohio. That's the famous school from the 1960s.
Yeah, everyone knows it from...
Right. There was a song from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young about that.
Yeah.
What was it called? Ohio. It was called Ohio.
Yeah, it's called Ohio. So
there we go. What was it like at Kent State?
It was good. I graduated in 5 years because my first year, I didn't know if I wanted to do fashion design or art. So my first year, I just took electives. And then once I chose my major, it really was just... I didn't really have much of a social life. I worked all day, all night.
Are you like a naturally introverted person?
No, it was so hard that like no one was in sororities in fashion design school. No one did anything extra because it was just so much. Like you're sewing collections of clothes. So it's like, it's just so much that goes into it.
Now, did you know once you graduated that you had to make a move to a major market, or could you have stayed in Ohio? Because in Columbus is like the fashion capital of the world. You have like, or of America, right? Where it's like Express is there and American Eagle's there.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I could have, but I wanted to get out of Ohio as fast as possible. Yeah. And I interned here when I was in college. So it's where I knew the most people, you know, to kind of land my first job. So it just made sense to come to New York again.
So tell me about the move to New York. Like, where'd you move?
So my first apartment was in East Village. I had one roommate. I've lived about probably 7 or 8 spots since. I've been here 7 years, just because you know how the New York life is. It's never planned. It's always like so many factors that go into it. It was good. I mean, I still feel like I'm getting adjusted. I don't feel like a true New Yorker even after all these years.
Oh, New York has a way about it, though, where it's never like your city.
Exactly. You know what I mean? We share it with like plenty of people. So.
It's really hard to come here and really feel like it's always going to belong to you. I step back home to Virginia. And I'm like, oh, this is where I naturally fit.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel more at home there. But who knows? One day it might change.
Okay. So now during this time, you're pursuing a career in design, but are you still making art and illustrations? Like, are you selling them? Or are you doing this in your free time? Like, where was art and illustration in your life when you had a full-time job in design?
So my first few years, it was like non-existent. I didn't draw for a few years, which is pretty crazy to think about. And then after I started off at Eli Tahari, then I was at Ralph Lauren, and then J. Crew, and I was at enough places to know, hey, I wouldn't be happy doing this. Even if I got to the design director, you know, level, I wasn't happy. So I got a part-time job I was planning on staying there 6 months. I was like, okay, I quit my corporate job. And I was like, I moved back home. Oh, I forgot about this. I moved back home for about like 3 to 4 months. Then I moved back to New York to get a part-time job. And at that point, I was applying at art supply stores. I was applying like anywhere that could just give me like 3 days a week so I could still, you know, get my business started. So I found a place that I could work 3 days a week while I still, you know, did art and got some clients and built myself up. But I ended up staying there 2 years before I could quit.
Okay.
Or before I decided to quit.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of the background story. But I've been doing it like 4 years, probably full time. Three, I don't know. I don't keep track.
So you went from Jahari, what was the clothing line?
Eli Tahari.
And then, also, was your focus like menswear or womenswear? What was your focus?
I did everything
in design.
Men's, women's, children's, but I preferred like womenswear.
And for folks who, you know, I don't come from the fashion world. You know, I come from the world of music. What is the working for these big companies that we all know, like a J. Crew? What is the environment like in these offices? Is it overly creative? Is it more of a corporate kind of vibe? But what is the experience like working at these type of places?
It honestly just depends on the company. It varies so much. You know, every company has a different dynamic. I honestly felt like I was sitting in front of a computer a lot. I mean, very corporate, the places I was at. I mean, it was fun, but not fun enough that I wanted to make a living doing it.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned that you were earlier that you were hopping around and someone told you, like your employer, your boss, looked at your illustrations and was like, why aren't you doing this?
Oh, yeah. It was for an interview.
Yeah, for an interview. And they're like, why don't you do this? You know, why don't you become an artist? Was that like a light bulb moment for you when you were like, yes, why am I not doing this?
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I needed that little like boost because, you know, coming from someone that was, you know, in a reputable position, you know, that kind of knew exactly what they were talking about. It gave me a little more confidence boost to be like, you know what? Everyone has a breaking point. And I feel like too many people, like, I don't know, they make a lot of excuses like, oh, it's not that bad, but we only have one life. You know, it's just like, it makes me so sad to see people that aren't happy in their jobs because I've been there and I know what it feels like. But I also believe in destiny. I feel like if you quit today or if you quit in 10 years and you like have a goal, you're still going to get to the same end point. It's just the matter of how soon you want to take the risk kind of deal.
Okay. Now put me in your shoes. You leave the corporate world behind.
And you're so happy.
And you are striking out on entrepreneurship. What was the first steps of your journey?
A lot of highs and lows. You know, I saved up enough money to, you know, sustain myself for a while. But honestly, there's still so many highs and lows. I mean, everyone looks at me and I assume like, oh, you've landed so many great clients, you're successful. And I still like struggle with ups and downs, you know. You have to kind of be like your own best friend through it all, you know. And I didn't tell my family when I quit. I didn't tell anyone I quit my corporate job. I didn't tell my parents, didn't tell anyone. And then they would call me at like random parts of the day and I would pick up and they'd be like, Deanna, like, why are you like always like available? So I finally like came clean once I, you know, started landing big clients. But it was definitely a struggle in the beginning. The first 2 years were like, oh, my God.
Yeah. How do you
very land? Scary.
You know, because where did you get the vision for? Like so many people have the ability to rap, right? Or the ability to write songs or the ability to illustrate. But they don't necessarily have a career focus of where they want to go with their art, right? How did you develop then the idea to, okay, I'm going to brand myself in a way of, I'm going to do illustration for fashion. And then how did you get that first client? Tell me that process.
Good question. I honestly don't remember my very first client. It was a book cover by Martha Michelle. She's a poet. She lives in LA. So that was my very first client. But my very first like corporate, like large client was Saks Fifth Avenue. And at that point, like, are you familiar with live sketching? So like at venues or like clothing launches or beauty launches, I live sketch guests. I do them like 5-minute quick sketch they take home just as like a kind of like a souvenir to remember the event by. So they reached out and they're like.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Deanna, like, we want to hire you for this event. You know, someone forwarded over your website. And at that point, I already did a live sketch event, and it went so bad. I was like, this isn't my calling. I'm not doing anything live, because I consider myself a perfectionist. I like to take my time. But at live sketch events, it's 5 minutes and whatever's on the page. Like, it's, you know, you just kind of have to wing it. So I was like, okay, I really don't want to do this, but if I want to land them as a client, and that's like my really big first client, I need to learn how to get good at it. So I showed up. It didn't go as bad as last time. It went okay. And then it's kind of just been like my favorite thing to do. It's like I have events usually like every week now. So it's probably like 60% of my business.
Now, I want to backtrack a little bit, because I know that you're explaining it in a way where it landed here, but I want to go all the way back to just, how does this even idea even come about, that like there's an industry for me to do illustration and fashion? Like, did you know anyone who was kind of in this role before that you had seen on Instagram or seen online and it's like, I could do that? Like, or did you just come up with
that? Yeah, no, good question. Because at first I didn't really know this was even a thing, even in college. So in fashion design, we have sketching classes. But I didn't really know people were making a living with it until like I graduated and I lived in New York, and Instagram, I started going on Instagram. So like Katie Rogers, she has like, it's called Paper Fashion. Blair's, like Danny Roberts, like there's like a bunch of illustrators out there that were, seemed to like be doing what I love. So that's kind of how I discovered. I was like, oh my gosh, they're doing all this cool stuff. If they can do it, you know, why can't I? So.
And break it down for me, like in dummy terms, right? Like for a person who has a knack for illustration, who wants to pursue this and go the route of working with brands with their art, like what are the first baby steps that you need to take before you even get to a client?
I would say before even pursuing anything, have a website up, like look legit, you know what I'm saying? So people take you seriously. And I would have a portfolio together. I would work on, you know, 5 or 6 collections just featuring your artwork. If you don't have any like big names to, you know, attach to yourself yet, you know, you're selling yourself. And I would go to a lot of events, you know, not so many networking events like sometimes I would, but just get out there and meet people, because once you're like friends with people, you don't know who knows, you know, people talk. So there's so many ways you can go about it. You can go about it the being super social, but then you can work from home and like promote online. So it's just, you got to work what's best for you, you know?
Now, you mentioned the event at Saks where it was the live illustration.
Yeah.
Tell me about that event. What was the event?
Gosh, I don't even remember. I think it was just an in-store event, probably some holiday where they come in and I just like sketch customers at the store as like little thank you.
Wow. And so from there you were able to build the relationship with them, but also get into like, what was the next step after that for you?
I mean, it kind of is like a domino effect. Once you get a few reputable, you know, respectable clients, everyone thinks like, oh, Deanna, how do you get your clients? Like, I'm at the point where they come to me, and it kind of sounds cocky, but I mean, when I first started out, I would be emailing every person, you know, looking through the alumni books, like, who do I know? Who can I reach out to? But then once you kind of like get a few under your belt and focus internally on producing more work and on yourself and on your website, they'll come to you. So the beginning, it was a lot of like outreach, but now it's finally to like the good part where, you know, I don't have to do as much work. It just kind of flows.
For me, let's say for instance, I'm a writer, right?
Yeah.
So if I was able to get a publishing deal, I can call some of my friends who have publishing deals with labels and kind of call them and ask them questions about like their deal. You know what I mean? Or what things should I look out for? You know, and they can look out for me and give me some advice. But for you, there's not a lot of people in this role of, you know, being an illustrator and working with big brands. How are you able to know like your value and know your rates early on? Or was that something you kind of had to learn through trial by fire?
Very good question. So the beginning, and if you Google something, art is all over the place. You know, there's not really like, I couldn't find a set rate. So I was super confused what to charge. And I went out and I met with a few illustrators when I first kind of wanted to make the transition, but no one was talking about the rates. Everyone gave you a little bit of info, but still it's competitive. You know, they'll see my work, you know, you're still competition to them. So, it helped, you know, with some things, but like, the main thing that I feel like finally made me on the right track was I always wanted to get into an illustration agency. And when I first started out, I applied to like 20, 30, so many. I didn't hear back, or I, you know, didn't get into any of them or hear back. Then I realized I'm applying to all these and I haven't even built my career up. Like, what do I expect? So I waited 3 years, I reapplied, and I got into one of my top agencies, which was awesome. I ended up being like my slowest year. I was at like a 6 month trial period. I think they booked me one project in 6 months. It was awful. I was struggling. I was like so much better on my own. But the good thing about that is I know their rates now. Like, I know what the standard is across the board for like book covers, for events, for all of that. So I have somewhere to gauge now, like, what is, you know, an on point kind of price point.
You mentioned illustration agency.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this existed.
Right? Yeah. A lot of people don't. So like, think of like music agents or like an acting agent. It's the same exact thing. But the agency I had, if you think about it, you log on the website and there was probably like 60 other artists. Okay. So at the time I was like, wow, my life is going to change. You know, I don't have to do the contracts and all this stuff that I don't really enjoy doing. Like, I was so excited. This is the moment I've been waiting for. But then I realized you have a website with all these other amazing illustrators on there. You might have three agents representing, you know, 60 people each or whatever. So I felt like I wasn't getting paid attention to, and you would have a client sign on the website and see all these other artists, easily get swayed, like, oh, let's click on this profile or like this. So it hurt me, but it helped me because I now know, you know.
You mentioned too about contracts. So
yeah,
at the agency, they would handle these contracts for you, but independently, you're handling these contracts yourself?
Yeah, contracts, invoices, following up with people, you know, keeping track of everything. Yeah, so that was nice. The agent would handle all of that, but they also get like a 40% cut.
Okay, okay.
Which is high.
So with these contracts, do you have to have people overlook your contracts or something that you could look at yourself?
I mean, there's templates and there's also websites. You can go on that have pre-made templates that cater to graphic design, to illustration, and then you kind of just like tweak them. So that's what I typically do.
Was there a particular moment in your life that was a breakthrough moment that you look back and go, wow, when this gig happened, like, everything changed? Or is something that's kind of like a gradual, it's getting better and better and better and better and better slowly?
I think it's a gradual getting better and better and better. And I feel like sometimes, you know, I'm not at where I want to be yet. I'm thankful. But it helps to look back and see like, wow, I actually have like accomplished a lot because I'm doing what I'm doing and I'm living in New York City. So like, that alone is an accomplishment. And I feel like I'm hard on myself sometimes, you know, I'm trying to work on that. So I guess I'm appreciative, but there was not like one moment that was like changed everything. It's kind of a domino effect.
I was talking to my homegirl earlier this morning. She's an artist in Singapore.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's super dope. We were having like a great conversation and like touching base about like the art scene in Singapore versus like the art scene kind of in New York. And we were having a great conversation about, with your art, you know, there's a balance between doing something that's like your passion and that you're passionate about. And then there's the other element of having to pay your bills and working with bigger companies. Was there ever any point of contention for you of saying like, I love doing my art, but you kind of have to go over here to the corporate side? Or were you always comfortable being in the corporate side?
Or being in the non-corporate side?
Well, okay. Well, I'm sorry. As far as like working to delivering art for corporate entities.
Oh, okay.
So, like, so was there ever a point, was it always an easy thing for you to hop into that world of delivering art for corporate purposes or for big publications? Or, yeah.
Like personal work, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's something I actually am still trying to get better at, because you would think, you know, I use my creativity so much, but really a lot of the times clients will have a specific brief. I want this type of girl carrying this outfit. I don't feel creative sometimes when I'm doing these projects because, you know, everything is planned out. So the finished product looks super creative, like, wow. But going into it, it just kind of feels like a process to me when I have commission work. So I'm working on doing more personal, because I put my paying jobs ahead of me just relaxing and letting loose and being creative, because I think, oh, I got to do this. I shouldn't be just doing something for fun. You know, this deadline's due. So I'm working on balancing that. I haven't, yeah. Well, something I struggle with.
What is that creative, like, what is Deanna First's ultimate creative, I'm doing my thing, look like for you? What, because to the outside world, it's like, yo, this is what it is.
Honestly, I feel like, you know, I work with name brands and all of that, but I'm inspired by, like, if I were to sketch someone, I would much rather sketch, like, the girl next door that is, like, just, that is pretty compared to, like, a famous fashion model. Like, when I'm, like, sketching for fun, you know, I usually sketch women. I love drawing eyes, things like that. I don't know, just something that, like, isn't saturated with a bunch of brands. I love all my brands.
Right, of course.
But, you know, something that is not, you know, in that world.
Because are you able to do illustrations and then have, like, private gallery events and sell them, like, independently as well, you know?
I haven't done that. I feel like, you know, that's definitely a good market and you could do that. I haven't. I feel like maybe once I complete a collection of illustration, like a series that flows nicely together, it would be cool to like pitch that or do a collaboration with someone. So you got me thinking that's a good idea. Yeah.
Because at this point now you're an entrepreneur. And you're managing yourself, or do you have a manager, or do you have an agent? And
I don't anymore.
You don't anymore. But at one point when you were independent,
I did. Yeah.
So I'm not saying when you were with the agency. When you weren't with the agency, you had an agent represent you?
No. The only time I've ever had an agent was with the agency.
Okay. Got it.
And that was only a 6-month period. And then I was like, oh, this isn't working. So I've been by myself for a few years now.
Dope. And Deanna, I have a question that I ask every person at the end of every episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I've been able to interview a lot of amazing people like yourself, people who are achieving greatness and achieving greatness and striving for greatness every single day. But for so many folks on this pursuit of greatness, they're not aware of how much sacrifice it takes to be great. You know, they just see the end results of that Instagram post and all the likes or the bottles being popped or the fancy cars and the nice house. But they don't see all the things you've given up to be where you are today. What have you sacrificed to be great?
How do I keep this short?
Keep it long.
and concise. I feel like I've sacrificed so much. I mean, I would stay in almost every weekend doing work. And just like, not just artwork, like you have to be very strong mentally in order to be an entrepreneur, to do your own business. Like mental health is something that's like so huge. And I feel like now it's great that it's getting so much attention, but I feel like it's almost getting attention because it's trendy or it's this like the cool thing to talk about. So I feel like just always being by yourself. Entrepreneurs don't talk about it. Like, I work from home. I worked from home for years now. You know, the only time sometimes I'll get like human interaction is at my live sketch events, or, you know, saying hi to the doorman or the lady walking, you know, at the coffee shop. But I feel like that's the main thing, like being okay with being alone and getting to the point that being alone isn't a bad thing. Like, now I enjoy my own time and my presence. But there was one point where I was struggling to try and balance, you know, working hard with a social life. But now, like, I really limit, you know, who I spend my time with. I mean, I'm very picky when it comes to my time. So I'm spending my time with you right now. So
super honored.
Yeah. So be honored about that.
Well, Deanna, first, thank you so much for taking the time out.
Yeah, no, it was so fun chatting with you.
I know your schedule is very, very busy. I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk with me today and being on the podcast. And I want to say thank you so much for your contributions to popular culture. I always feel like, you know, living in New York City, you know, I have a slogan for the podcast is hang with leaders and learn from legends. But I'm a firm believer that the leaders of today will be the legends of tomorrow.
I love that.
You know what I mean? And you're going to be a future legend. So
thank you so much. No, it was a pleasure chatting with you.
All right. Take care. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast, and to our special guest, Deanna First. This episode was mixed by Joshua Coleman. If you're a fan of Silent Giants, please be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review in the podcast app. And lastly, before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, OPP, Other People's Podcast, the TRL of podcasting. Each week, I interview America's top podcasters to learn more about them and the dope shows they created. I'll provide the link to OPP in the description of this episode. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Pod bless. Till next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.